podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
All right, the lads, it is the weekender from the Anfield Wrap, and we are looking back at the brilliant results against Spurs, and forward to the brilliant results in the post against Crystal Palace, hopefully. In between, we have got John talking to Mike Dean about Liverpool lullabies, believe it or not. He's also talking to Uber Butler about his new documentary series about people hiring lookalikes. So they're a little bit different, aren't they? So those two things in the middle, and then back with the panel to talk about Palace. And the panel today is Joel Richards, Siobhan Began, and Martin Fitzgerald, and me, Gareth Roberts. And Joel, start with you, mate. Spurs just felt absolutely massive, didn't it, in every respect?
Yeah, it was the kind of win that we got on the regular throughout last season, and to me, it felt like a bit of a moment. I think if we are to go on to win the league again, I think we'll definitely look back at this game and go, yeah, that was the first defining moment of the season where we grounded it out. We were brilliant in parts. Tottenham had their little spell at the start of the second half. They had chances to win it. And that's the story of their time at Anfield the last couple of years. They've had moments in games where they could have won it and they haven't. And then in the end, we've managed to pull it out the bag. Firmino, he's had a lot of stick this season from people like myself included, and he's just reminded us all of how important he is to this team and how he can come up with the vital goal even now that he hasn't got that many this season. So yeah, I think to me, it just felt like a moment, and it just felt as if, right, now we start, we're back top of the table, and let's see if we can push on from there and dominate.
Yeah, it has got a little bit of a feel of the Villa win last season as being a defining moment. And Siobhan, we've talked a lot on the Anfield Wrap, obviously, and elsewhere people have been doing the same about the influence of supporters, the difference that it makes to our fans in the ground. And I think anyone who's ever doubted that, you need only to watch the clip of Bobby's celebration on that winner, what he does, where he goes. You know, he's not running to an empty cup, is he?
Exactly. It was so... this wasn't weird at the time because it was all we had, but when you see the celebrations in the games with no crowds, which obviously there still is a lot of them, all they are a bit like, well, where do I go? I'm just looking at each other. They're just kind of just going, all right, yeah, let's just start the game again, whatever. But that he is a man who he thrives on an audience, doesn't he? He likes the showmanship of it, and I think that was obvious in his game, but also in his celebration. I was made up for him. I think there comes a point where we have to stop being made up for him and just remember that this was his game and this is what he does, because I feel like every time he scores, like, we're going, I'm fucking made up for him, blah, 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 blah. But actually, it's just because he's an absolutely top-draw player that he does those things, you know. What was the Tim Sherwood's coverage of him saying, no man's going to get to that ball except that one. That was perfect. I've never seen something so moment perfect in my life. I watched that at least 400 times last night.
Yeah, absolute chef's kiss of a moment, that one. Absolutely brilliant. I loved it. I watched it over and over myself. Got through a bottle of wine just watching replays of it. Martin, everything about this Spurs game was feel good, wasn't it? And there were so many good performances as well. You know, Henderson, Wijnaldum, Fabinho, sort of take your pick. Curtis Jones, as good as anyone on the pitch at just 19 years old as well.
Yeah, I thought, you know, right from the off, we were absolutely superb. I think it was the best performance that we've done all season. We totally dominated them. Everyone, I think, was brilliant. I think you've obviously mentioned a few there. I thought second half Genie was just incredible. I've seen anything like it. And, you know, when they scored, which, I mean, it you know, came out of the blue to the extent that I don't even think the cameras really caught the move when it happened at the start. You just sort of cut to, you know, Son's through. And you thought, and I don't care what Jose says, he would have been made up with that draw. And he would have seen that as a win, actually. He would have gone in that dressing room and said, we come to the champions and we didn't get beat. And that would have given them momentum. And he hasn't got that now because we scored in the last minute. You know, Bobby runs to the cop like Adebayor when he scored against Arsenal. I mean, unbeknown to us, Tim Sherwood is doing probably the greatest bit of TV anyone's ever seen. You couldn't have written that any better. You couldn't have had, if that was a film, you'd have done 400 takes to get to something, because as the timing of it was incredible. So all the momentum's with us now, and we've got a decent run of fixtures ahead of us. It does feel massive. You're right. I think it just feels like a, like the sort of thing you look back on and you say, yeah, that was when it changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joel, it just feels like, you know, if you were sitting down and going, okay, I'm going to write something about last night's match, you know, there's so many different stories in there. There's so many different tales to tell. The usual stuff about, you know, psychology, the bounce back ability after Fulham, you know, whatever you want, really. There's loads of little tales, but, you know, sort of lost in it a little bit, I think. Premier League debut for Reece Williams, and what a Premier League debut.
Yeah, I mean, he came up against the two in-form attackers in the league, in Harry Kane and Son, which, you know, would rattle any young defender for me. And the fact that he came out of the test with, I wouldn't say he came out with it with flying colours. I mean, there was a couple of moments, but look, he's 19 years old, he's learning on the job. He's had a season on loan in the National League North, and then he's been propelled to the Champions League. He's played 6 games in that. He made his full Premier League debut against what were the league leaders before last night. And he didn't disgrace himself. He was calm, composed. He made any little ricks he had, he made up for them in abundance. He kept England's captain in his back pocket. I wondered if he's still being found, yeah, in amongst his car keys and whatever else. And he's someone who has benefited from the injury crisis that we've got. And it's, you're now looking at it and thinking, well, if he plays, it's no problem. We've got nothing to worry about. He'll be fine. Okay, if he makes a mistake, he'll make up for it, or he'll get better from that. And I think if he plays between now and the rest and the end of the season, whenever Van Dijk and Gomez return, you're fine with it. In fact, you actually want to see him play. That's the good thing about him, is that when people are seeing the team and seeing his name on the team sheet, mates of mine are going, ah, oh, chance. It's great. I made up. He's starting tonight, rather than, oh, fucking hell, why is he playing again?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest compliment to him is that you can say we didn't really miss Matip, and you know he won everything in the Reese. Even, you know, he's even playing a through ball there to Mane. It's not like he just hoofed everything away. I think, you know, not only is he looking a good defender, you can see that there's a player in there as well, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think having come through the academy as well, it's just another tip of the hat to them to say, this is another product there who can now potentially go on and play a substantial amount of games for the first team, rather than being a flash in the pan or making the odd cup appearance and then we don't see him again, or he gets farmed out on loan to X, Y and Z for a season, 6 months or 2 seasons, whatever. He is a player that now he could potentially be a squad player for years to come. You know, I'm not saying he's going to go on and be our first choice centre-back and he's going to be the next Van Dijk, because that's going to be a very difficult thing to do. But if he carries on the way he is, then he can easily be a squad player for the next 4, 5, 6 years, or however long, or however well he does.
Yeah, absolutely. And Siobhan, Martin touched on it a little bit there about how this will knock Spurs, the other side of the coin on this. You know, the Mourinho implosion at the final whistle was an entertaining side story to all this, and you know, Klopp just grinning at him was absolutely superb. But it did clearly hurt Mourinho, and it will hurt Spurs as well, won't it?
I think he was preparing for this as well, because all in the lead up to the game, he was like, this is just another 3 points, this is just another game, I'm staying calm. He's so transparent, isn't he? You know full well he's absolutely gearing up to defend, and then catch us on the break, which he did, but unfortunately for him, it doesn't work for 90 minutes in every game. And yeah, that little meltdown at the end was so, so sweet, wasn't it? It was so... I feel like his downfalls are getting earlier and earlier into his tenures at teams, and it's just, yeah, it's lovely. When Klopp went towards him and he was just teeth in his face, yeah. Just like, it was just pure teeth. Yeah, I think it will knock them. I think that the media would, I definitely got a sense that it wasn't like, you know, the way when we were playing City last season and it was all like champions versus challengers, and it was pitting us as the underdogs. I got the sense that they'd spun that on its head a little bit, that the media thought that Spurs were going to go on this run and that Liverpool were fallible, which they've proven to be and all that. But, you know, I suppose that makes it sweeter, because I think the world was waiting for for, you know, us to slip up again. And from, I was thinking about this last night, and the Fulham game stank of a group of lads who were waiting to play Tottenham this week, didn't it? When you reflect on it. So it will knock them, absolutely, and, you know, keep on knocking.
Well, a funny Siobhan should mention that, because I was speaking to a mate of mine last night, and we had that sense of Tottenham are the current media dear darlings, and I think sort of Mourinho's charm offensive has been setting up his Instagram account, getting a few likes, getting a few funnies out of that. So he's sort of the happy one again, or he's everyone loves him again now, rather than being this sour-faced, miserable bastard who everyone's like, oh, we kick him out of football, he's no good, he's a dinosaur now, we don't want him anymore, whereas now he's on the charm offensive, he's trying to be down with the kids, he's had the Amazon documentary which has made people fall in love with him again, the way his little nuances and his demeanour. So I think it did feel like that, and there was a lot of like people waiting for Liverpool to fall. But another point me and my mate made was that Tottenham was just set up as the perfect kind of home game where we rise to it and go, right, this is who we are. We don't lose at home. We've got this magnificent home record. We want to keep it going for as long as possible. We're the champions. We haven't had a performance yet that people have stood up and gone, that's why the champions. And it was just it was the perfect ingredients under the lights as well. And it was just felt so right. And it was a big win.
Yeah,
on Mourinho as well, like the thing that makes his mask slip even more is that what he said in his interview afterwards was absolute bullshit. None of it had any ground whatsoever. He says the best team lost, which anyone will, I'd say even Spurs fans would disagree with that. They had one strategy and it didn't work, unfortunately. And the whole spiel about, you know, oh, Klopp's treated differently. What relevance has that got to what the question's been asked of you? He's just trying to be relevant and trying to make a headline, and all he's done is made himself look dead stupid, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, it was classic distraction, wasn't it? And I think there's a sweet little stat there as well, that it's now 66 games unbeaten for Liverpool in the Premier League. And Mourinho was part of, you know, obviously Chelsea's magnificent, you've got to say, home record also, which Liverpool will now be aiming to topple. But he wasn't responsible for all of it. He was responsible for 66 games of it. So we've now matched that, so that'll probably get up his nose as well. But Martin, on the Reds, just to conclude on this part, Liverpool's odds to win the league now, as you would expect, have come in significantly. I mean, City not long ago were the favourites. Liverpool are the favourites again now. We are 3 points clear of Spurs. Man City still have a game in hand, but, you know, it's sort of out of sight when you're looking at the table currently. It sort of feels in our hands-ish.
I mean, I think it's definitely in our hands. And you look at the table and it's, maybe we're not used to this after the last year, but it looks relatively tight up there. There are teams within single digits of us. We're not quite used to that. But I just think, I actually think Spurs are the only team that I was concerned about, because I think everything that's gone on this season and the way that football has been this season, I kind of think it suits him and it suits them. I think there's something happening at Man City. I don't know what that is. It just looks like they're bored of playing with each other and they're bored of doing those things. So I think it is in our hands, not just because it's in our hands mathematically, but we are the best team. And the only other team that has shown something, I think, to challengers this season, you know, came to Anfield last night and they got beaten in the last minute. That's great. So we just need to, what we need to do now is, particularly in these run of fixtures coming up, is just get that consistency down so that we're not turning out performances like we did against Fulham. We're not leaving ourselves susceptible to a last-minute VAR decision against Brighton. We need to be beating those teams, you know, kind of by the 60-minute mark, resting a few players and just accumulating the points. That's got to be the strategy now.
We are, of course, well, some of us are now, of course, back in the ground as well. I was fortunate enough to be in there for the Wolves game. John Gibbons was in there last night for the brilliant winner from Firmino, and I hope we're all keeping our fingers crossed that one or more of us will be there again when we play West Brom. It has, of course, meant that we can do content in and around Anfield once more, which has been brilliant. The feedback on that already has been superb, so thanks for that. We are aware that some people just listen to the free shows and don't sort of get a flavour of what you get from the subscriber show. So before we go to the insert, we just want to play you a little clip of Gibbo doing 2 minutes inside Anfield on the final whistle. Loads of people seem to love this, so we're going to give it to you here. And if you like it, well, consider subscribing to the Anfield Wrap. You can also gift the Anfield Wrap subscription to someone for Christmas too on the website, theanfieldwrap.com. After that, the insert as promised. So John with Mike Dean on Soccer by Baby, LFC Lullabies, see what he's done there. And then Uber Butler on his new documentary series about people hiring lookalikes. We'll be back shortly to talk about the Crystal Palace game.
We've done it! What the fucking meds? This is what the cup sounds like. All 2,000 of us is loud, isn't it? I'd give it up a bit, to be honest with you, because we didn't create a lot second half, did we? Spurs looked a little bit comfortable, and well, never mind the team. That's Andy Robinson giving it the big one. Listen, man, fuck me up. Jordan. Brilliant. We're not going to get a Jürgen, but that's fine. It's unreal, this football team. Oh, they just keep going, don't they? Keep surprised, you know. Man. Oh, he's coming, he's coming. Oh, what a tease. I said he wasn't coming there, he was. This football team, these sets of lads. I don't know if you've heard, but Liverpool are top of the league, up to 400.
And it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by your old friend. It's Mike Dean. Mike, how are you?
John, I'm great. Just recovering from last night, to be honest.
I know. We're officially here to talk about Soccer My Baby, which is your new project. But to be honest, I just want to talk about the Reds, Mike.
Well, we can dovetail a little bit, John, because I'd say Bobby Firmino there has given me the perfect advert with him being the opening track on our new recording.
So tell us about it then. Tell us about why you've put together what you have.
Thanks, John. Yeah, it's a bit of an unusual project, but I think it's unique and kind of gives it a bit of a gap in the market as far as me as a cop season ticket holder and a new dad is concerned. John, a little bit like yourself. my firstborn, Sid, was he joined us 4 days before Madrid in 2019. John, so I called it the first European fan that I've missed. But as my dad called it, the first European final with your son. So obviously we were all on top of the world, weren't we, as Liverpool fans at that point? And, up in the middle of the night with him, trying to get him back to sleep. Brahms, Lullaby, Rockabye Baby and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star were kind of far from my mind. And found myself singing the beautiful melodies of Mo Salah, he's Virgil van Dijk and Si Senor. To little Sid to get him back to sleep, and I kind of just felt like I could do with a bit of an album in the background to help me out and go through the full repertoire really. And I was just interested to see whether there was anything out there like it, John, whether there'd ever been a, maybe it's just still a completely mad idea and that's why nobody's done it before. But there were no lullabies for football fans, football fanatics with newborns. And obviously I've been working in music as a professional for 20 years and got a really good network around us, not just, you know, mostly here in Liverpool. And so I just got to thinking if I could get somebody together, a little team together to help put the, reinterpret the classic Liverpool songs, the modern Liverpool songs, a wonderful track list that we've pulled together into lullabies, that we might be able to package this up and get it on the shelves. So I called an old friend, Joe Wills, who's been a producer based in Liverpool for many years now. He's worked with the likes of Dan Kroll, Steel and Sheep, or We Are, producing their records, working in Parr Street. Mm-hmm. And then we got together with an incredible pianist called Nick Smith. Nick's very successful in his profession at the moment. He's doing like TV adverts for Facebook, Alfa Romeo, Kit Kat, and all that. And one of his most recent things was a BBC Radio 1 with Stormzy, where basically he's the composer. But he's a football fan. He's an old friend. He's a good friend of Joe's. And they were both as mad as me and thought that it was a great time to do. So we kind of spent the next few months really just, I was working out a track list and what I thought was the best balance of old and new, classic and modern. So we pulled together a really good list, John. We've got, you know, You'll Never Walk Alone on there. Tommy, Ring of Fire, all the classics. But we've also reinterpreted as lullabies, and they do reinterpret so well, John. The likes of the new hits such as Si Señor, Mo Salah, Virgil van Dijk, we won it in Madrid. And alongside some fantastic work on the design and the packaging and the whole imagery, really, to pull down the vision, what was in my head from local designers and illustrators to Contango. We've kind of now got the product that I had in my head all those months ago now, John. An absolutely wonderful process.
Yeah.
Deciding which songs, a wonderful process. I think it was the only time I've ever been in a studio and felt like, yeah, I mean, I'm the boss here. I know exactly what I want. I know exactly what I'm doing. And it was wonderful. The only thing that was tricky, John, was getting the licenses. So you can imagine, going to Ewan McCall, obviously, who've done Dirty Old Town, saying, I want to do your song as a lullaby to Virgil van Dijk. Going to June Carter's publisher and saying, we want to do Ring of Fire as a soothing nighttime song for babies. But I mean, you know, it's funny how many responded with good luck with the project and off you go. It's funny how a few of them said no. And we had no answer as to why or come back. So there's a couple we didn't get on there, unfortunately. But then there was a couple that we didn't even realise had an original writer. So we traced Si Señor right the way back to a Spanish language artist called Fito Páez. And he was the last track. He was the lead track on the album for Si Señor, because for me, it's still the catchiest song of recent times. So it was the most important for me to get on there. But it was the one we had to go to the wire on, because we had to go to a Spanish publisher, explain our position of what we wanted to do, and ask permission from Fito Páez for his song, Y Dale Alegría Mi Corazón, so that we could do a lullaby for Si Señor.
Oh, it's a brilliant story, mate, and quite a process. And, you know, you talk about doing it all properly and speaking to the artists and all that. And I know now it's I don't know if endorsed by the club is the right way, but it's counted, although it's you, it's counted as official LFC kind of produce.
Yeah, maybe there's some people at the club as mad as me, John, but they've been interested and very supportive in the idea. They saw that there was a gap in their baby gift, the baby gift shelves, both online and in the shop, that there was an opening for something like this. So they placed an order for their Christmas range in the baby gifts, and it's all officially badged up with the lovely Live a Bird, the glittery hologram, and the Liverpool FC lullabies on the front cover. So it is available on the Liverpool FC website and in all of the official club stores now. It's a lovely CD, John.
Yeah, it's great.
Packaged. It's a perfect gift, but it is also available to stream on Spotify and all the major streaming outlets, Amazon Music, Apple, etc., etc. And with your CD and your packaging, you get a digital download. So many, many ways to listen to it if you are purchasing it for a family with a newborn, a mad family with a newborn.
Well, it's bailed me out many nights, to be honest with you, mate. Got me out a lot of trouble.
I do remember the first night you put it on, John. You sent me a picture of a sad Ted. And then later sent me a picture of a sleeping Ted, so I was very happy to help.
But it must be nice though getting those endorsements, you know, where people message you saying like, "Oh, it's sorting me right out," you know what I mean, at bedtime. It must make you feel good.
Oh, John, you know, it's done the job from the likes of yourself to I mean, even obviously one of your colleagues there at the Rap, Paul Senior. He's just had Benjamin, and it's definitely helped him out. keeps you away from the traditional lullabies and allows you to go through it. The whole repertoire of what you've really got in your head late at night at the moment, which is all those songs from the Cop, John.
Yeah. So as you say, it's on Spotify. People can stream it. But if people do want a copy of the CD, and it is beautiful. It's really nicely designed. And as you say, really nice presents for someone. Where's the best place to buy it from?
Well, it's up on LFC Retail, John, and they're still getting orders out for in time for Christmas from today. So I'd say go on LFC Retail. We're also working with some Liverpool independent outlets now. So it's available at South Liverpool Voglio. It's available at the Scouse Bird Shop. Steph absolutely loves the product, and it's flown off her shelves since it went in, to be honest. And the lads at Boss, who I do a lot of work with on their international events, they're now stocking it on their shop up the Reds. So plenty of stockists, and go and grab where you want it from.
Tom, oh, man. Mike, lovely to speak to you. Best of luck with it, and up the Reds, eh?
Up the Reds, John. Thanks so much for having us on to tell your listeners about the product, mate. The perfect baby gift for Christmas.
And it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Uber Butler, who's a sometime contributor, sometime interviewee, but is here to talk about his new project. So, Uber, welcome back to the Anfield Bar.
Cheers, John. Happy to be here. cheers for having me again.
So people will know you from, well, you've been on the Anfield Rap just talking about football, but also talking about, you know, other fun things you've done in the past, documentaries that you make, that get a lot of attention, and the latest series is no different. It's around lookalikes, which is a theme you've explored before.
Yeah, I mean, it was strange. It was kind of, so the idea behind these new films is that it's strange because it kind of all comes in this long succession in projects that I've done. So I did it came from the fact I did the thing where I turned my shed into the number one restaurant in London. Then that story went viral. And then to do those interviews, I decided to send like better looking versions of myself to do those interviews on TV, or smarter versions of me to go on radio as me. And it was like genuinely good for my career. People, not only did the interviewers not realise, but it genuinely improved my opportunities. That was kind of the conclusion of that film. And then after that, I thought, well, why shouldn't everyone else be able to do this? So I came up with this idea for a quote unquote app where anyone can order a lookalike of themselves. And that's kind of the basis for the new series. It's trying out this app called Uber, which is my name. It's kind of a pun on Uber.
So I mean, the documentaries that you've made then, they're genuinely sort of heartwarming in parts as well, and I don't know how much of that was sort of a surprise. The one that I think got the most attention, and certainly the one that I enjoyed the most, was around the school reunion, and I wasn't expecting it to be so nice. Were you expecting it to be that nice when you made it?
No, not at all. There are two films we're talking about here, and you are right. I think that the second one, which is about, you know, the title is sending an attractive lookalike to my high school reunion. And I think you're totally right. I think that's the film which did the thing that I kind of hoped might. I didn't hope that it might happen. I did not expect that heartwarming a tale. No, as you say, but it happened. And I think it happened because the guy who came to us was in this genuinely vulnerable, uncomfortable position about who he was at high school, which I think basically all of us, unless you're a dickhead, can relate to. Like even the popular people at high school were still uncomfortable with themselves. So it was like started from this position of this guy, he's called Stephen. He's in, I'm going to have to say this right because I have so many hate messages from Americans. Maryland, not Maryland.
like the cookies.
Yeah, exactly. He's from this place called Maryland. He's kind of got this... kind of got this slightly George Costanza vibe to him in my opinion.
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
Yeah, like kind of like looks old beyond his years, really sweet guy. And just really he left high school with this kind of dream of who he was going to be, and he wanted to be a musician, and he's amazing. He's a saxophone player and he is unbelievable. He left, you know, he went to college to go and do music, and that was his dream. He like went to pursue that, but you know, things didn't quite work out. And I think that the reality of becoming like an artist, as it were, like he was living in Baltimore, 2 hours away from where he grew up. You know, the reality of kind of being an artist, a struggling artist, kind of was dawning on him and his family, and his dad kind of has slightly persuaded him to start looking into maybe being a dentist, which is a great career path. It's like interesting how we put music, I mean, both of us play music, like, but put it on a pedestal, don't you, in your head, because it's associated with so much. Do you know what I mean? But he has the same thing. So seeing the fact that he had gone into being this dentist thing, and his dad had finally said to him, like, I want you to come home and take over the family dental practice. And it was kind of this, like, he was at this crossroads in his life where it was, do I continue to chase my dream in Baltimore, or do I go and do the sensible thing and move home to this small community, which I'd moved away from? And we kind of, weirdly, he approached, like, he answered the call to my lookalike call at that point. So what we're seeing in that film is this, like, guy genuinely going through this, like, rite of passage in his life. And it's mad that his way of rationalizing that was, you know what I want to do? I want to send an attractive version of myself to my high school reunion in my play. It's like, it's mad. And I think the reason why it's so, as you say, kind of why it's got that more of a soul to it is because it's like a very relatable story. Yeah. He's really likable. And I think we were just really lucky, to be honest. You just don't know. You've done tons of stuff with contributors. You just never know how people are going to react to stuff. And he wore his heart on his sleeve, and he gave his, like, as they say, pound of flesh, as it were, for that. He went through something, and that, I think that, and it didn't go right, which is great. It's just perfect. Like, at the time, I was like, shit, we don't have a film. But then you start on the night, start to realize, oh no, wait, this is the film.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're talking about it in quite abstract terms, aren't we? But you know what I mean?
No, it's hard to say, because I don't want to give too much away and I want people to watch it. But I think the thing that sort of, you know, I do want to sort of touch on and what really sort of shone through is, and as you say, it's very relatable, because I think a lot of us kind of have struggled at some time with, well, how much do I actually mean to people? Do you know what I mean? And how much do, you know, while I'm around and people might laugh at my jokes and stuff. And but, you know, if I had not been in that school, would anyone have really sort of, you know, would it have made any difference? You know, if it's, you know, I'm 10 years away from people, you know, am I sort of still in anyone's mind at all? And this guy genuinely thought he was so insignificant that he could just send someone else and it would all be fine. And he was wrong, and in a really nice way.
Yeah, completely. That's exactly it. He felt invisible. Those were his words. And he was like, you know, I'll send a better looking version of myself. And he was bullied at school, and this kind of comes out through the film. And then, you know, that discomfort with not wanting to go into that room, but also kind of feeling the need to, because he's moving back to this small community. And then, like, yeah, just to see him go through this thing. So we find this kind of attractive guy who looks sort of like him. We shave his head in a bath to give him male pattern baldness, which is ridiculous. One of the stupidest things I've ever filmed. and then we make him kind of look similar, but, you know, and then we kind of trade, like, we wanted him to be the cool version that Stephen would have wanted to be at high school.
Yeah.
So, like, the stuff that he wants, that he would, like, you know, he's cool, he's in a touring band, he's got tattoos, he's got all these things, and the specific moments from Stephen's high school which haunt him, very specifically this moment where he played at the end of school dance, and he was in the band and he got up to do his solo. It's a big moment. I mean, John, I'm sure you've got solo stories where you get to, I've seen you play some good ones, and you get to have your moment. So he gets to the front of the stage. He this is his moment to shine. He turns around and he's actually prepared something for this event. And he's made a shirt that says "Chicks Dig Me" on the back, as kind of like this cool, like whatever. He's had him in a laugh, whatever. And he turns around and shows everyone his t-shirt in the audience, and everyone starts going wild. And he's like, "Wow, you know, they love it." Or he thinks it's about the fact that they love his solo and they love the shirt, but it's actually because he's got a massive wedgie in his in his trousers. You can see like his complete ass through his trousers, and that moment haunts him. And it's so funny because it's the kind of thing that it haunts him, and probably no one else has thought about it, or probably just thought it was funny, and that's the reality of it. So he wanted, there was things like that he wanted specifically to do over, and we were kind of, the point was we were indulging all of these, like, all of these things that mean something to you about high school but shouldn't. That was the point. And then reality is what happens on the night.
Yeah, no, it's... So how big is it gone? To speak sort of crassly, sort of what numbers are we talking about?
What number are we talking? Yeah, we're talking just between 15 and 20 million people have seen that film specifically, which was great. It's specifically been gone down really well in America, which is cool. It's quite strange with the films where what does well, you know, in different places. I mean, it's, sure you have the same experience. I think it is quite an American story in its own little way, but the core message of it, of discomfort of who you are at high school and who you are, you know, that feels pretty universal. It was covered in good amount of press out there, good write-ups in like the AV Club and along across like radio, NPR, shit like that. To be honest, I had no idea what to expect with this, because I always think with the stuff that I do, the way that I test whether I think it'll be a success is I think we've talked about this in the past, but I try and figure out, you know, how are people going to be talking about this without any great kind of challenge in a pub? Like, how is someone going to go, oh, have you seen the thing with the da-da-da-da-da? You know, if it doesn't last that sentence, I often find that people won't be bothered to talk about it. And this one, I was kind of on, I didn't know where it would, it didn't have that kind of, in my head, that viral quality to it in a way. It was very much about like the soul of it. But I was proven wrong, as I often am. And it's done, I'm really, pretty blown away by it. And I haven't put anything out in a while. So I've been working on long-term projects. So it's a relief as well, you know what I mean? That people have enjoyed it and people have tapped into it. And happy.
And how much has your star enjoyed this sort of newfound fame, if you like? Because obviously it's 15 to 20 million people viewing your video, but it's 15 to 20 million people looking at him.
I know, and his like this intimate kind of life story. We chatted for a long time actually on the phone. I don't think he'll mind me saying. He was like, "Are you recording this?" And I was like, "No, oh God, no."
not the worst person in the world.
No, exactly. Because I've had a similar experience where years ago, obviously, when the first thing I put out went viral, and I did not expect that to happen. And all of a sudden, you went from a position of shit, this thing that I thought was my own experience is now everybody's. But I think that it's obviously it was a shock for him. And we're on the phone and, you know, it's going up, you know, oh God, now 9 million people have seen it on Facebook and now da 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 da. And it was weird, I think, for him, as it would be anybody. But I spoke to his mom as well, who's really sweet, and his friends, and just made sure that he was cool. But the reason it works so well is because he did actually get something out of it. And he sees it as this kind of experience, which is kind of has a value to him. But I couldn't speak on I'm sure for anybody it'd be uncomfortable to have that kind of level of intimacy and about you and your experience. I just wanted to make sure, and I feel like in comments and stuff like that, this has come across, but that he you wouldn't want to make something. This is, I made the other film that I made about the skydive. I think the reason that one did okay, so it's about 2 million people have seen that. And the reason I don't think that film is as good, and I don't want to make anyone's mind up, people might really like it, some of my friends prefer it, but like, is because it's not as human.
Yeah.
And it's too unrelatable, whereas it's, you only, when you're setting out with something, you hope that it has a kind of a human quality to it that people can tap into, and that's what it was about Stephen. So I've tried to make clear to him, you know, the reason that people like you so much, the reason people like this film like you so much is because they relate to it. So yeah, so I had to try and make that clear to him, and I think he's an absolutely lovely guy, and I think he's settling back into that community now, so kind of got him to where he, I think he was always going to get there. I'm not taking credit, but you know, I was part of the story. At least.
Great. So people who haven't seen it yet and they want to watch it, where's the best place they can find it?
Yeah, I think that the best place to watch this kind of thing is on YouTube, I would say, just because the platform itself lands it. You can watch it on your TV quite easily. You can watch it on, you know, just Google YouTube, either my name, and it will cut. There's a Vice on Vice YouTube. There's a section, there's a playlist of all of my Vice films, just called Life Hacks with Uber Butler, and it's all there.
Binge them all. Uber, it's lovely to see you, mate. Take care of yourself and have a lovely Christmas.
Oh, God, yeah, Merry Christmas, mate. Yeah, hopefully see you soon.
All right, brilliant stuff. Thanks to everybody there. Back with us now, back with the panel, and we are talking about Crystal Palace v Liverpool. 12:30 kickoff, BT Sport. And yeah, Siobhan, I'll start with that, really. I mean, is that now an issue? Is that now a thing for Liverpool after, you know, Jurgen Klopp went to town on it? Or do you think, you know, it won't even enter the players' heads?
The annoying thing is that whether it was a thing or not, now everyone thinks it's a thing.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a thing beforehand anyway, because I just fucking hate them, because they ruin your weekend. If it doesn't go well, your weekend's ruined. Your achas are always down if you've backed on the first game. You can't plan your day when you're not going the game around them. Yeah, I'd hope it's not a thing, but again, playing in midweek and then playing first game on a Saturday doesn't seem ideal. But I suppose the thing about this week is everyone's in the same boat, aren't they? Because everyone's playing in midweek. I'd like to think that, I've said this a couple of times, I said after Wolves they'll be buoyed by that and they'll go into the next game. I'm going to say it again, they're going to be buoyed by last night and they're going to go into this. But I think it's a tough fixture to have after last night, definitely. I don't think they'll be easy opponents by any stretch, and I think they'll be out shit house in Tottenham, I'd imagine, tomorrow on Saturday. But listen, you go into all of these games confident that Liverpool are going to do it, aren't they? And I think that they've kind of pulled it out in these in the bigger games, and I think the Crystal Palace have done enough this season for people to think that this is a big game.
And Joel, the weird thing about this, you know, we're obviously all happy and buoyed and flying because, you know, Liverpool are top of the league and won in the manner that they did against Spurs. But the weird thing is Liverpool's away form so far. And there's some stories around that, of course, the VAR decisions, the goals not given, the penalty decision at Brighton, whatever you want. You know, there are reasons there. But nevertheless, you know, you look, if you split the table and you do home and away, you've got Liverpool at home, 7 out of 7, 21 points, perfect. And, you know, the second best team at home is Southampton, and they've only took 12 points. So, but then, you flip it and you look at the away table, and Liverpool are the 16th best team in the Premier League away from home currently, which is madness, you know. So they've only won one, they've drawn four, and they've lost one. I mean, what you make of that, and is that a thing?
I think at the moment, I think it is definitely a thing. It's something that is an area of concern for sure. I mean, okay, we had the anomaly that was Aston Villa. We've had heartbreak in the derby. We had a gritty 1-1 against Man City. So there has been a couple of tough away games. But then one of the supposed tough away games, we went to Chelsea and wiped the floor with them. All right, they had 10 men for half of it. But so we can do it. It's just the draws that we've had. I'd liken them to silly draws, especially the Fulham and Brighton ones, because we were terrible against Fulham. We stunk the place out for about an hour, and then we only got going afterwards. But with Brighton, it was we were grinding it, and we were so close to grinding, and they're out and coming away with 1-0, where you go, all right, we weren't great, but we got the points in the bag. So it's definitely an area of concern. I think that it's got to be rectified as soon as possible, because you can't leave it any longer. I think if the longer it goes where we go, say, six or potentially seven games without an away win, you're starting to panic, and that could undermine the title challenge, the title defence. I said challenge then. But, you know, and especially if other teams get their act together where they go on a sustained run like a City or a Tottenham or maybe a surprise package, then it does become a big concern. But I think, looking at it, you've got Palace away on Saturday where, real of fun, we've had a great record there the last 5 years. We've won nearly every game there. We've got Newcastle away, last game of 2020, which, again, they are terrible, and we should be going there expecting 3 points. But then the first away game of the new year, Southampton, and that's the one where I am worried about, where I think, oh God, I wonder what position Southampton are going to be in by the time we come to town in the new year. So Saturday's a big one. We've really got to go there and win, but what condition the players are going to be in or what changes we make, who knows? We could go there and make 5 or 6 changes and everyone's going, oh, panicking, going, oh, why is he starting Minamino? Why is he starting whoever and ever? But the thing is, it's been such a quick turn around. Although, this is the last of our heavy schedule. After this, we've got a week off, so there could be a thing in Klopp's mind where he goes, right, we need to come out of here with 3 points, so I'm just going to go with the same 11 again. But who knows, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Martin, on Palace, it's hard, almost as ever really, with them to make out what they are and what they're about. We know they're under Roy Hodgson, so you know you've got that aspect of their play, if you like. But they seem to just have found a way to get something out of Christian Benteke finally. But now he's out now because he got sent off. So they've got to adjust there. But just looking at the results, you know, they beat Leeds 4-1, they beat West Brom 5-1. Very un-Hodgson-esque results. They've drew there with West Ham this week, drew with Tottenham Hotspur, but then also lost to Newcastle, lost to Burnley. And it's a bit scratch your head, like, you know, what are we going to get from them?
Yeah, I think that's fairly typical of a Hodgson side, isn't it? That, you know, capable of decent results, you know, and then obviously we know, you know, capable of being absolutely terrible. But I think the thing about Palace is that to understand, it's just a difficult place to go, you know. And I'm not talking about, you know, fans or anything. It's just a difficult place to get to.
Right? Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, full experience of that, Martin.
Yeah, it's just...
Full experience of that.
You know, as someone who's, you know, from that part of the world, it always... I mean, there used to be a fellow I used to get a match with, and he told me that he had so many bad away trips to Palace, and then one of them he tried to get a ferry. I'm like, where the fuck are you getting a ferry from? What are you doing? So that's the first thing to overcome, actually, is just getting there. Trying to work out that part of southeast London. It's not easy. Once we're there, in all, and they give us that, they give us like a porter cabin, don't they? Or like, yeah, a wheelie bin to get dressed in. So that's not ideal. And then there's a big eagle and cheerleaders. Once the whistle starts, though, we're the better team. And, you know, it's been interesting, Benteke. He's had a little resurgence in that he's now scored 3 in the last 80 games. But then he got sent off. I think we'll be fine. I think, on a serious note, the important thing about this game is you win it and you're 6 points clear.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And you put your feet up for a week. So I don't think it's... I think it's great that it's a 12:30 game, because actually you turn it on its head and we're playing on Monday night and everyone's caught up and they're 1 point behind or they're level. Fuck that. We can just go 6 points ahead with a win against an inferior side on Saturday morning.
Yeah, is right.
Fair enough.
And I think the odds reflect that as well. You know, Liverpool are 1-2. Palace, you can get 11-2 on, which is, you know, big odds for a side that I've just been saying there, you know, have broadly speaking been doing all right lately. Siobhan, what it's been touched on there about, you know, he may just well say, okay, you know, you got a bit of a break after that, so let's go same again. Do you think he'll do that? Or, I mean, there are one or two things there in that, you know, it sounds hopeful on Matip, so you would imagine he's dropped back in if he's available. Klopp did say if the game against Spurs had been a day later, basically that Joel could have played. So, you know, you'd expect to see him. And you've got Naby and Ox kicking about as potential options. I mean, the other question is as well whether we're just going to ask Gini Wijnaldum to just play forever. Because, you know, you look at the sort of appearances for this season, and Firmino, Wijnaldum, Salah and Robertson have all played 20 games already. Mane's on 19. Fabinho, I think, is around there as well. Yeah, he's 18. There's got to be a point, surely, where Gini does get a rest.
I mean, you'd think that, wouldn't you? It's just not look. Every time we go, oh, yeah, this week, this'll be it. And just absolutely not. I would imagine that maybe around the Newcastle time would be where we could afford to rest him more. I think we can safely say that this is a game that it's just worth throwing Everton at. And I would imagine I wouldn't be too concerned if Matip was the only change there. But I wouldn't be concerned if he wasn't a change either, which, you know, Joel touched on before, you wouldn't be gutted to see. But I just think the way Crystal Palace are and the tricky kinds of fixtures we've had against them in the past, experience might just pay in that sense. So I feel so sorry for Gini. Like, when does he get any annual leave? Like, when does that lad get like a rest, like just a couch day? When does he ever get a couch day? He hasn't had any injuries. He hasn't had a little COVID for a little rest. He hasn't had anything like that. So he just like, but then, you know, the flip side of this, and me and Lizzie had this conversation not long ago, these are professional footballers. They might just want to play in every game. But I suppose Klopp's got a job to manage the ones who want to that can and the ones who want to that absolutely cannot. So I would imagine Matip to be the only change. Potentially something in midfield if the game is won by an hour, as Joel said before, but I wouldn't be changing anything else just yet.
Yeah, Joel, go on, mate.
Sorry, just a quick one. Do you think we're purposely running Gini into the ground so if he doesn't sign his new contract and walks away, whoever he goes to, we're going to that?
He's got no legs when he goes.
Yeah, lads, just basically ran the arse out of him. He's broken biscuits. Go on, get something out of him for the next 3 or 4 years or however long you call him for.
That's basically what I was going to say to you, though, mate. You know, he's played so much football for Liverpool, and it's kind of, you can kind of sort of get the violins out a little bit for him if you want and say, you know, they never gave him a pay rise and he's not on as much money as him and how did his contract reach this situation? But to be fair to him, he's never moaned. He's never come out and had a pop at anyone about it. And he plays, you know, he seems to have a lovely smile on his face most of the time. So it's like, I think we as fans sometimes are creating something here because he doesn't look like he's unhappy. He was unhappy when he was benched against Barca and we got to see angry Gini then. But other than then, he seemed fairly happy with his lot, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And I think even when he tried to get contract talk out of him after the Wolves game, he just batted away. He said, you're going to have to speak to the club. I don't care. I'm not asked. I just want to crack on. So with Wijnaldum, he's just been the model professional over his 4 or 5 years here. You've never heard any dissent from him. And, you know, I think what it says about his stature within the first team is that he's one of the captains. But the funny thing is, he's one of the captains, but yeah, I've barely seen him wear the armbands. He's never got a chance to wear the armbands on the pitch or be captain for the game. So he's just been magnificent. And if this is his final 6 months in a Liverpool shirt, then we've just got to make the most of it. And we've just got to appreciate what a brilliant footballer he's been for us and how great a servant he's been. And no doubt, he'll go down as a legend for me. He'll always be fondly remembered. He's one of those players who, although like Salah, Firmino, Van Dijk, Mane, they all get the plaudits. But when I look back on Wijnaldum in years to come and I go, oh, you know what? I loved him. He was a great player. He's never going to be your favourite, but he's always going to be fondly remembered. I mean, I don't know how you could liken him to someone from the 70s or 80s. I don't know whether Martin could help me out there or even yourself, Robbo, but yeah, he's just been a magnificent servant and let's enjoy.
He was unreal last night. He seemed to pick up just a different level of fitness midway through the second half, which, I mean, you know, once he stopped being man-marked by Anthony Taylor and he got out the way, I thought he was just bouncing off people. He's so professional, which is a weird thing to sort of describe a footballer as. I can only talk from my own experience, but, you know, when I handed in my notice, I just spent most of the time down the betting shop and not answering emails. And because you've handed in your notice. He's not. He's the opposite of me in every respect. Good for him.
So the moral of the story here is be more like Genie, don't be more like Martin.
I don't know, you know, there's pluses to both, I think.
Not a clip.
Responsibly that way.
Not a clip for LinkedIn there, Martin. I just wanted to get you to round off here. Martin, you seem particularly bullish, so let's start with you. What do you see? How do you see the game playing out? What do you think the score is going to be?
I think it's going to be comfortable. I think we're going to have it won by 60, maybe a couple up. I think it's not just a case. I think what Klopp will be saying is, this isn't one last push before a week off. It's just one fucking really energetic first half. Because you know with Palace that they don't need to win this game, right? They're doing all right. They're not going to go down. He'll always keep them up, right? But just blow them away early on. And then you can start your rest during this game. I'd be surprised. I think Matip might be the only change, but as Siobhan said, I wouldn't be bothered if it wasn't. I think, such as it is with injuries now, I just don't see how anyone else gets a game other than that current 11, really. I don't see Minamino or Ox getting a game. I liked what he did with Keita last night, just got him to stand up for 2 minutes at the end.
Gave him a hug.
Give him a hug, see if he could manage that. You know, just baby steps, easing back in. And, you know, come spring, you know, 10 minutes on the pitch for him. But I wouldn't mess with anything now. I'd just go down there and just try and blow them away as quickly as they can, because their heart can't be in it as much as ours.
So what are you saying, score?
3-1.
3-1 to the Reds. Siobhan, what are you
going? I was going to say 3-1. I'll go less comfortable and say 2-1.
Let's go down the betting shop, Siobhan.
Okay.
Maybe see if Genie's down there.
He's not, because he's a model professional.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He'll be training or something. Joel, what are you going for, mate?
Right, well, would you have a clean sheet? I'm a man who loves clean sheets. Like Virgil, I'm a stickler for clean sheets. So would you want? We need one more than anything. So I want a 2-0. I expect a 2-0. I think it'll be a 2-0, so I'm going 2-0. But if it's anything like my last trip to Palace at 12:30 on Saturday, well, I hope it's not like that, because that got out of hand very quickly and turned into a long night and I had to rise from the dead on Easter Sunday. Just like Jesus. So I hope they don't take my approach to Crystal Palace at 12:30 on a Saturday, that's for sure. But yeah, I expect a 2-0, so fingers crossed.
I love the way you initially gave that scoreline then. I feel like we should just clip that and put it in the players' WhatsApp group, you know, like a 1 or 2-0, it will be 2-0.
2-0. 2-0.
2-0. Like, they're just all going, make now go, fucking hell, it best be 2-0, otherwise Joe Richards is going to be after us.
Yeah. There's some fella there's a fella on the Anfield app who may or may not be Jesus. And he expects a 2-0.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It is nearly Christmas. The Reds gave us a prezi the other night. Hopefully they will again against Crystal Palace. Thanks to everyone on the show today. It was excellent. It was a good laugh. Hope you enjoyed it too. And as we said in the middle of the show there as well, if you like what we're doing with the free shows, do consider subscribing to the Anfield app and getting a lot more, because it's a fantastic time to be a Red. So there you go. That has been the Weekender. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.